Welcome back to the Untangling Web3 podcast. Today we're joined by Diego Borgo, a global top voice in Web3 and brand executive advisor to household names like Adidas, Prada, MasterCard and Porsche. With over two decades of experience in branding and another 8+ in blockchain, Diego guides founders through the rapidly evolving Wild West that is Web3 by helping them to drive commercial value and customer engagement. We've invited Diego on the show to answer the question, does Web3 have a branding problem? Does it need a rebrand in 2025? Let's find out. Diego, welcome to the show.
How's it going, guys? I'm stoked to be here. Thanks for having me. It's a hell of an intro. I feel pressure now.
Well, you're well known in this space, right? Like, I see you on LinkedIn all the time, the pink beanie. So we're super excited to have you in. I think, you know, we've been going for like a year and a half, almost 2 years now. So I'm surprised it's taken this long to get you on. But yeah, I'm so excited for this. I think we're going to learn a lot. And obviously, the first question is, you know, this is the Untangling Web3 podcast. We started this podcast to basically try and define what Web3 is because no one had a freaking clue. I don't even know if we have a clue. The more time we spent trying to define it, the harder it gets. But you're speaking to the big brands of the world. How do you think Web3 as a term, as an industry, is perceived in, you know, 2025?
It's a good question. Yeah, I mean, a lot of what's happening has shifted in pressure in you know, sort of like the mainstream mind. If you look back to 2021, 2022, in early 2023, there's a lot of hype around it, right? Like Web3 is the metaverse, is metaverse the Web3, right? Crypto, blockchain, is crypto Web3, is blockchain Web3, is like, and then AI part of it, or AI is going to kill it. So there is always a lot of confusion because I think you put it really well, right? Who knows what it is? And definitions are already there. Of course, the Ethereum Foundation came up with the term. And if you go back and look into the papers and details about it, there's a clear statement of what it is. But I still feel it's hard because it's a moving target, right? It's an always evolving thing. I play a lot with this idea of that I guide founders through the ever-evolving web. And I think that this is nothing more than it, right? We obviously have seen tirelessly those charts when we go Web 1, Web 2, Web 3. And it's that sort of like evolution is a stack of technologies that are being put on top of each other that are evolving the way we communicate remotely, right? I have my own thesis around sort of like that stack. I've been quite vocal about it, right? The interface of it is going to be immersive, which we already keep seeing more and more and more. Mm-hmm. The metaverse was a kind of like a way of starting to grab into that, but isn't necessarily there yet. But then we see immersive gaming, then we see augmented reality, then we've seen virtual reality and other things that are trying to reshape the way the interface of the internet is. Then we also have things like data, right? Databases and how data is transferred from A to B. And that's where I feel there is a very strong position for blockchain to be at, because that's where you know, we're going from centralized silo data centers to a decentralized, more open source and more sort of like collaborative and permissionless way of exchanging data, that being personal data, that being money as data through crypto, for example. And then you have the logic element of this, right? Which is we started with a quite simple code, and that got to evolve and have a more logical thing behind it through machine learning and all of that. And now we get into the AI craze, right? Where logic's changing, where a lot of other elements are being added to that. So once you get those sort of like three big pillars of interface, databases, and logic, that for me is a much better way to convey what the next internet is shaping to be or is already at in its early stage. Name it Web3, name it Web4, name it Web69. I don't really care. But that's what I think is kind of like what we keep talking about day by day.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense. You touched on so many terms that people typically use, like data ownership, decentralization, all this kind of stuff. And I think one of the problems we've faced this a lot is like, we started off with blockchain and Bitcoin, and we're like, yeah, this is obviously, you know, this is obviously Web3 fundamentals. Then you go into digital identity, and you go into, say, like AI, NFTs, all this kind of stuff. And it kind of, the further out you go and the more things are advancing, it's like, okay, is this related to Web3? Unsure. But the problem is there, it's so ambiguous because Web3 is an underpinning technology. Like, I'm not going to go sell a blockchain to some person on the street, right? I'm going to sell all the applications that are built on top of it. And it's because of those, like, the kind of fundamentals you just touched on, transparency, you know, immutability, the ones that are always kind of using decentralization. But I wonder, like, so when you go to someone, like you say, you're talking to these big brands and you use the term Web3, is there a branding problem? Does that, where does their mind instantly go that you think it's an issue to say Web3?
100%. And I made this my mission this year, because I always try to like be behind something every year because this changed so fast, right? So back in 2021, once I left Adidas, I was like, I want to bring as much Fortune 500 brands to this industry as possible, right? And then I spent the entire of 2022 working on that. And some of the brands you mentioned before were part of that process, right? And then 2023 was a lot into that, but I start feeling that there was a pretty big difficulty on navigating those brands through a chaotic ecosystem at its infancy. But also because it was really hard for them to try to find a real use case for them to stand behind it, right? So I start sort of like shifting, okay, the way on which we're going to get where we want to go, which is mainstream, is not going to be by bringing those big brands as I thought it would. It's going to be rather by bringing Web3 companies that all founders I ever worked with and ever talked to want to go mainstream. So how do we reverse that process? Right, it's not bringing people to where we are at, is rather bringing where we are at towards people, right? It's meeting them on their own terms. So I set myself on this mission this year on, you know, one, claiming that yes, Web3 needs a rebrand, and then two, understanding on how we go about rebranding it, right? So that point of how do those brands perceive, and also like any other person or a small-sized company or mid-sized company perceive, is it's very clear. Web3, crypto, blockchain is scams, Ponzi's, and no use case.
Yeah. And the podcast episode over.
Yeah. Web3 stands for that, right?
Holy shit, Web3.
It's still like a pretty strong sentiment on the streets when you talk to people or on those rooms when you're walking in, right? And a lot of that is caused, of course, by big scandals like FTX, Luna, and a lot of that. But also because we as an industry make it really difficult for people from the outside to take us serious, right? Like, yep. Trump launching a meme coin just made it even harder, right? So
yeah,
there is a lot in there that is really hard for the people from the outside to sort of like understand. And because it moves so fast, it's also very difficult for them to sort of like to follow it, right? So I'd say that's kind of like the first thing. The second thing is, if that wouldn't be necessarily enough, we just love the technology we work with, right? We are obsessed with it. So every single website I go to, regardless of, you know, size or whatever, you start seeing things like hyper secure, zero knowledge cryptographic algorithm, right? Like, what does that mean, right? And and I've been in the industry as a you know, learning and curious back in 2017, 18, but I've been full-time in this industry now for 4 years. And there's still a lot of stuff that I go through and I just don't understand. Like Hyperliquid is a good example. It took me like good 2 weeks to figure out how does that even work and what does it mean, right? And a lot of that obviously trickle down to the mainstream, because if we are spending 25 hours of our days on Twitter, Telegrams, and talking to people within our jar, and we still struggle to get it, imagine like the average Joe, right? So a lot of that problem comes from this. And then the sort of like the third element of it, which I am part of the problem, and I'm not here to point fingers at anybody, is that we love presenting Web3 as the Wild West, right? It's the Wild West. My newsletter, it's currently called the Wild West of Web3. I'm part of the problem. Again, I'm not here to point fingers, because we're proud of it. But at the same time, once you take yourself out of that equation, who the f*** wants to be in the Wild West? Who wants to jump on a ship with a drunk, you know, captain, just going somewhere that nobody knows what it is, and you can risk it all. Nobody wants that. And we think the mainstream is excited about it because we are, and they aren't. It's turning them off, right? So that's kind of like, for me, the three core big pillars we have as an issue from a brand perspective. Now, scams, Ponzi, all of that, it's really difficult to change from a brand perception. Once you build an industry that is permissionless, everybody can come and make their own token and all of that, it's really difficult. It comes from its essence of like, anybody can do whatever they want, right? Which comes with pros and cons. But now the tech talk, the way brands are positioned, the comms element of it, the way that they understand their target audiences, the way that they shape their messaging to meet people where they're at, the way they build products for solving real world problems, the way we build user experience, the way we build all of that, this is in our hands. And the element of presenting Web3 to the others, to the rest of the world, is also in our hands, right? So those are the things that I've been quite strong on, because of course, spending so much time with those brands and trying to get them to understand, to a point that I'm like, this is not the job. The job is not getting them to understand. The job is us moving where they are and making it make sense to them, so they want to join us on the journey.
Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, you've obviously hit, I think, probably all the key points that I've heard of around the brand issues for Web3. You know, the scams, the perception of everything being a Wild West, as you said, and I used that in the introduction. It's on your everyone does it, right? Because it can feel like the Wild West in practice, but it, you know, that you're right, that doesn't attract anyone who wants to be there. And then the sheer level of techno babble you get in this industry as well is mind-boggling, right? Because it seems like in Web3, I feel like a lot of the time we're just trying to convey the technical supremacy of what's happening, of one chain or one protocol over the other. But that's, you know, that goes back to the whole Betamax VHS, right? It's not the best tech that always wins. It's the one that has the best branding, the best product market fit, right?
So 100%.
I think one thing, do you think the whole question of utility runs through all this? Because I think all of those different aspects lead people to question whether there is real utility, right? People see the scams, they say, well, that's not useful. They see the Wild West, they say, how can I find utility in the Wild West? You hear the technobabble and it's not conveying what the actual utility is for real people. Because I think people who, as you said, people are in the blockchain Web3 industry, they might hear the technical terms and think, oh, I understand the underlying utility there. But for most people, that's just impossible to pass, right? Like, how do you convey, and what do you think are the main value propositions that we should be focusing on getting out into the mass market?
Yeah, you said something that I'm really happy you said that, around, you know, technology is not always the one that is winning, because, you know, brand is, of course, what makes a big difference there. There's a lot of like really tech products there that have grabbed a big space from branding, and that we are having to use every day, especially people that work in big corporations. That is not necessarily the best way of doing it, right? So you're 100% right. And I keep hammering this idea that tech is an equalizer, not a point of difference. Right, brings everybody to sort of like the same element, and then the point of difference can be built on top of it, right? Through brand and through communities and through other elements of it. So, just wanted to comment on that. From a use case perspective, I think that there is a couple things that, of course, drag me into the industry, and I still think, you know, it's extremely relevant. Of course, nobody can talk about blockchain without talking about payments, right? We obviously seeing all the movements happening around stable coins right now, and how especially, you know, the latest around the US government and regulation on how, you know, stable coins are indeed, you know, ready to revolutionize a lot of like asset exposure for investors outside of the US and in the dollar per se and things like that, right? So that's undeniable. And I feel that, you know, is a use case. Decentralized finance was built entirely on top of it. So I think that's something like it's the holy grail. Bitcoin main use case was exactly that at its inception. The sort of like the second pillar that I'm obviously very excited about is the element of data privacy and preserving data. You know, when you start looking to zero knowledge proof and things like that on especially on how those things can be embedded on the back end without you necessarily having to interact with it, and that those proofs of information can be exchanged within different databases without the user being exploited or exposed. You know, obviously really excited about that element as well, which is obviously extremely technical and not really exciting or appealing for end users. But the third pillar for me, especially right now with a lot of the evolution that has happened in both industries, and I see them getting closer and closer, is AI and Web3, right? AI and blockchain, sort of like creating it, it's kind of like its own niche within our industry. But I think that rapidly also taking over, you know, elements beyond, you know, either or. Because as I said before, at the beginning of the AI boom, everybody was just kind of like pointing that AI is going to kill Web3, right? And AI now took over and Web3 is dead and blockchain is dead and blah, 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 right? And I keep just going back to the answer was always the same every time I see it. I was like, just look at your phone. Look at your phone. Is this one technology or is this a stack of technology that make magic happen in your hands? And that's the way I always look at this, right? AI plus blockchain plus that plus this equals something better, right? Mm. So it's not like a sort of like a either or scenario. So those are sort of like the three pillars for me that are very clear use cases that, you know, there's a lot to be built on. You know, if you look into supply chain and transparency, there is obviously a lot that has to be, that can be done, that is already being done. I work, for example, with Shell, the energy company, and they had a 8 years plus old team within the industry that has literally been working on supply chain, things like that. So there are a lot of use cases in that sense. But now when, you know, I got asked a question, which was kind of like a checkmate for me as well, because got me really to look differently. I worked with James Watt from BrewDog, the founder. I've been working with him for a minute. And he, while we were discussing different elements, he asked me, like, which application that is Web3-based you use every day that is not connected with trading? And I was like, huh.
That's true. I can't think of one that I would use every day, unless it's ChatGPT as part of the stack, which is probably my answer.
You know what I mean? So that's kind of like, that shows as well, like there are use cases which are still extremely impactful, like the ones we just said, but consumer crypto, which is kind of like the promised land that we are being driven to, is not here yet. You know, you could argue that like Tone now through Telegram's blockchain network and a lot of like, you know, Telegram having its own wallet within it and mini games and people transacting within wallet and stuff, it's a step forward towards that direction, which indeed is, but that's probably it, right? I would probably very likely stop there, because then you look into Moonshot and like this is all trading, right? There is ways for you to get in, but it's all trading focused. So those are you know questions that I also keep asking myself, and it's quite exciting to think about, because there are two ways of looking at that, right? The pessimist and the positive, right? The negative could be there isn't and there will never be. And what we spoke before is its core and it's all what you're going to do and it does it really well and we should be, you know, happy with it. Or there is so much more to be developed, but it's still at its early stage. So, you know, you got to sort of like look from those two angles. I don't have the answer, but those are the ideas I keep playing in my mind.
I think it's still a big thing, though. It's not to be, in my mind, I agree with almost everything you've just said, but the financial system is over 50% of global production, right? It's still a big industry. And if your entire use case is just making it slightly more efficient, that's still like has a massive impact on everyday lives, right? There's so many things that I want to touch on there. Like I think the problem may be in a degree as well is like the idea of like revolutionary versus evolutionary. I think the mindset early on was say like the early Bitcoin Ethereum projects was like, oh, we're going to overhaul the entire financial system and it's just going to replace the dollar, whatever. It's going to be the new global currency. And like when you're going in with that kind of mindset, obviously traditional companies that dominate the world and traditional users, they're like, actually, no, I don't want a revolution. I'm quite content with my system. And I think that has kind of changed a little bit with the, you see like the term Web 2.5 was used a lot, and you see like the big institutions talking about real world assets and like this slow progression, this like more, it's like not a revolution, it's more an evolution. And I think then you get like the less risk aversion because you can test the water a little bit. But another tricky thing with this technology is like so much benefit comes from the network effect. And, you know, like having lots of people adopting it and getting there instantly is the end goal. And there's so much benefit that comes from that. But when you're fighting against a system that's already well adopted, like the Visas, the MasterCards of the world, the US dollar, all this kind of stuff, it's really hard to get to that network effect. And I think that's probably played into it. Plus the fact that the whole premise is removing centralized entities, and those centralized entities are going to fight against it, right? They're going to resist it as much as they can because they have an incentive to stay there. But when you're talking about things like privacy and, you know, data collection, I don't think people cared about that 10 years ago. But like you say, AI right now, social media has played a big influence in all the leaks and all this kind of stuff we've seen. But AI has played a massive part in people understanding that there's a lot of information taken online that's available that about them that they didn't even know. And I think you're so right that I thought, most people thought initially that AI was going to kill crypto, Web3, blockchain, all this kind of stuff. But I really do think it's brought it into the forefront of the conversation. One, to really like empower AI to, you know, guarantee data quality, you know, privacy, what's it called? Data minimization. So you're only sharing the relevant data, not everything scraped online, which is happening now. And also to bring it back to the financial stuff as well, to monetize it. Like imagine if you say, you know, I don't want to give my data, but I'll give you a fraction of a penny if you give me your signed off data set. And I only need the key bits, not where you live, but just say, you know, your date of birth or something like that. It's a whole new angle to AI. Like it's something that wouldn't be possible without these, you know, is kind of radically different kind of currency and financial rails that are provided with crypto and blockchain. But I'm really glad you brought that one up because I think that's one of the best use cases for it going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I can talk a lot about that because, you know, it's literally what I'm really excited about right now. Let's wrap on brand and then let's dive deep into AI because I got a lot of things to say there. So one of the things as well, going back to sort of like the big brands, the mainstream, the rebranding of Web3, and how the outside world is looking at it, you know, I try to also be factual in a sense of what are the numbers right now, right? What are the numbers within Web3? And the latest data I could find and the sort of like quote unquote most accurate that I have seen so far is that we got about like 10 million active wallets in Web3. And by that, I mean that use decentralized applications that are, you know, like really interacting with different dApps in a daily basis, right? Not necessarily just trading, not necessarily just holding crypto, right? So that's like 10 mil, right? How many people are that? We don't know. I have at least 12 wallets, right? And I'm sure you guys have the same or more, but it's not a lot. The second element is there's 560 mil crypto users, right? Like those are people that have bought crypto, maybe in centralized exchanges, or that's your friend that bought, you know, Cardano or XRP in 2017 and never ever even know where it's sitting right now, never came back. So there is that, you know, it's a large number, it's 500 million people. But if you start looking to the amount of people that are actually using the internet, it's about 5.5 billion people around the world, right? So if we are building the next iteration of the internet, as we keep saying we're not winning, right? We are not winning as an industry. So that's where I think that calling for a rebrand, that idea of looking, you know, going upstream, meeting people where they're at, building applications that solve problems for them, but communicating with them in the way they understand, speaking with their hearts and minds. You know, I always love this concept of technology is the mind, it's mind, and then emotion and feelings is the heart, right? So how do you bring together, how you shorten the distance from the two, which within our industry and AI included, you barely see it. We always talking like numbers and features, and you go to all those websites, there's not a single photo of a person even, right? Like it feels like so far from it, you know, people don't even have an emotional reason to care, you know, because kind of like, why should I even bother? Right, is all kind of like tech talk, and I'm not a technical person anyway, which is 99% of the words say. So just to wrap on that, I think that you know, from a undeniable truth, like we all agree there's three pillars of problems we currently have. And then to the factual side of it, I think there's so much potential for our industry to grow. But, you know, things need to change and things need to evolve, as they have been doing within the tech, as they have been doing within the culture. But I'm still looking for the time where there is branding in Web3, because currently there isn't.
Today's episode is sponsored by the VeChain Foundation.
Now, we often talk about how emerging technologies like blockchain have the potential to revolutionize sustainability. And VeChain is at the forefront of this green movement with initiatives like VBetterDAO. Let's take a closer look.
Imagine tracking small actions, like recycling, at low cost, making them valuable assets. These verified records build a massive collective impact, benefiting people through their own actions. Sound a bit complex, but VeChain made it fun. Explore our apps at vbetter.com.
VeChain's goal is to power a new era of sustainable solutions. So if you've got an app idea or just want to earn rewards for small, sustainable actions every day, go check out vbetterdao.com to find out more. And now, back to the show.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, maybe before we, as a last question on the brand, because I'm really fascinated by this aspect, and then we'll go deep into the crypto and AI part. But, you know, brand is obviously, I don't need to tell you, is a very complex thing. And I feel like to a lot of people, it just means a logo and a name, right? But it's more about what you were talking about, right? The connection, the emotions, the purpose behind the movement, in a sense. So how do you think we can coalesce around one thing? Because I think in what we're calling Web3, I think you have a similar view to Alec and I. We kind of think of it as a tech stack as well, that is the kind of, you know, the Venn diagram of all these different technology layers coming together. But then when we try and pin it down to, okay, where's the value proposition, we end up naming 2, 3, or 4 big use cases. So do you think it's possible to coalesce around a kind of single vision or message on this? And I don't want you to give us any of your trade secrets on this if you have anything in mind, but do you have a general sense of like where maybe we should be focusing as an industry on a single core kind of vision or you know, mission for what we're doing and why people should care about it?
I think it's going to be very very dependent on vertical. You know, I work, for example, with DeFi protocols, right? PIF Network is top 100 market cap, Oracle provider. And every time we talk about brand and every time we talk about how we simplify, how we communicate, how we go forward with it, the only word that comes back is always trust. Trust. Because in DeFi and banking, that's all that matters, right? We're literally playing with people's money. So like trust needs to be its core. Transparency, because that's why this industry was created at its first place, right? So I think it's going to depend on the vertical you look into that, right? For other verticals, probably this isn't necessarily the what you're selling, quote unquote, right? Because, you know, like a DeFi protocol is selling trust, right? You can trust on us, put your money here, you got to be fine, right? So I think it depends on sort of like the overall vertical. I think that if you look from a wide industry, will be more complex, because it's kind of like, if you would, you know, reverse the question on what is AI selling to you, what is, you know, like, or what is immersive experience giving to you, I think that it's quite wide. But I still think that trust will be within the top three elements of what Web3 is selling. I think trust, transparency, and me personally thinking that is the element of being permissionless. You know, especially within the sort of like the financial and banking system element of that, on which anybody can join, anybody can be part of without having to ask permission to do so. Trust, of course, because, you know, code is code and you can go through it and you can read. And if you, everybody can sort of like understand the contract that is there, everybody that's able to read a smart contract for now. But and transparency is just that element of like seeing where things are going, right? So I think those three, especially when you look from Web3 as a blockchain, for a better use case in the sense, being a database, you know, like those three things stay at its core. So those probably will be sort of like the values that we are selling with Web3, if I need to stretch just to give you an answer. But I think it's more complex than that, because it's going to be dependent on each, you know, vertical sector. And obviously it's going to come down to company values as well.
I think like trust is, it's quite a hard sell. Like I'm trying to work out how you'd sell that without getting technical, right? It's like you don't trust our technology. Maybe you trust a brand potentially. I'm trying to think of, Because when you, like you say, I completely align with what you're saying around brands. Like it's a, you really need to try and connect less to the head and more to the heart. Like Steve Jobs is obviously one of the absolute kings of doing this. He made you feel something, barely ever talked about the tech specifically, about the features necessarily. It was more about, oh, I'm taking you on this journey. Apple is this trendy, cool software. Do you believe in Apple? Who cares so much about the device? Do you believe in Apple, the brand, and you're going to buy into it? Like he was a master of that. He was a salesman. And I think you are right that trust is the fundamental underlying pillar of all this stuff. But is it possible to build trust in this technology and kind of push this as the golden standard for trust without, say, big brands and institutes kind of rubber stamping it as well? Or do you think, say, your average Joe on the street needs that big institution to bridge that trust gap as well and say, yeah, this technology is trustworthy and you can trust me because you've known me for the last 10 years of banking or something like that?
Yeah, you're 100% right. There is a big leap, you know, like we were brainwashed to believe that we always need someone in between to create trust between each other. Right. Mm. And that was always the thing, like, oh, I don't know Jack. I don't know if you will buy something from Jack. Like, I don't really trust him. And then eBay, Amazon, PayPal come in between and say, hey, listen, we can make you trust Jack. Just let us be the scroll between you two, you know? And here we are. So I think we've been brainwashed to believe on that because it's convenient for the companies that are centralizing the power and taking a cut in between. And making people understand that now there is a technology that excludes the middleman, but still remains, you know, keep the trust between two parties. It's a big leap without talking about the tech. Because then they're like, okay, like, how does that even work? Or why should I trust Jack if nobody's, you know, in the middle of us? Like, which magic is that that's in between? So I feel where you're coming from on that sense. You know, I think it's a core value of our industry, but it does come with a little bit of unpacking at least the fundamentals of why it's more trustworthy and why someone else is not needed in between, right?
And when you're talking, this is hopefully a nice segue, but when you're talking about trust in systems, AI, right, this black box that is so hard to explain, so hard to understand, how an answer comes about, why it's given a certain answer, who's giving biases between different models. Like most people really trust in, you know, what they Google, what the computer says, because they think, you know, it's got no bias. Like it doesn't make mistakes. And when you have these LLMs these days that are, you know, you have like basically godlike capabilities at your fingertips and you ask a question, it gives you an answer. A lot of people trust in the answer without really knowing what's going into that answer. How does, you know, trust play into the future of AI? How does blockchain play into the future of AI, do you think?
It's everything. You know, I heard a quote the other day that really made it click to me from the founder of HyperTensor, where he was saying that who controls AI controls the truth, right? And the truth in the future, as we move towards more and more AI taking over search engines and agents, of course, they're gonna be doing a lot of things on our behalf. The truth is gonna be whatever someone else decided that the truth should be, and someone else comes from a centralized element, right? We've seen that with Gemini, when, you know, like you've seen the absurd images that were coming out of it just because of inclusion and diversity and DEI and all of those politics from Google, right? And then we've seen as well within DeepSeek, anytime you would ask something about the Chinese government, you know, it wouldn't necessarily reply. It would literally just break and say, hey, let's talk about something else. You know, let's just talk about something else. Right.
On that point really quickly, it's like, I don't think many people realized how much bias there was in these systems, because a lot of them have been created by, say, Western biases, America mostly, some European ones, all this kind of stuff. And it wasn't until we got something that was very different to that biases with DeepSeek that you realized how different the answers were. And I think that put it into a lot of people's minds. Actually, these systems are very fallible and they are designed, programmed, limited, filtered by humans at the end of the day.
Yeah, 100%. So that's what I'm really excited. I know it's super early. I know it's impossible to predict. I know I shouldn't and I can't be here telling you what's next, because that's not my role. And who the f*** know what the future is. But I'm excited about decentralized AI for that, right? That's where the merge of blockchain, peer-to-peer, you know, what Bitcoin already has proven to be a really strong use case for people running nodes all over the world, the network being run sort of like by itself, the community, the collaborators, people that are using it. And there is a lot of movement right now around decentralized AI where things like that can start to feel that are being mitigated, right? Again, far, far from you know, its full inception. It's an interesting promised land that we'll see what is going to come into fruition or not. And I'm being, you know, very mindful in the way I communicate that because I don't want to be here selling pipe dreams. But I feel there is an interesting use case there, right? Because if you start looking into how people within the network can get rewarded for providing most accurate information and other people validating those information, the same way that blocks are, you know, created when people are validating and, you know, doing certain mathematical solutions, how the decentralization element of it makes it unstoppable, right? I always love this idea from Naval that if Bitcoin would be possibly to be stopped, there is a, you know, I don't know what is the market cap currently, but there is a ginormous incentive for someone to stop, break it, and steal everything that is on that system. And it hasn't happened so far, right? So don't tell me that's possible, because if it would, someone would have done. So when you start looking from that angle as well, you can apply the same elements into AI, on which if there is a better way or a closer way for us to be closer to the truth without necessarily being, you know, biased or true a centralized, you know, direction like we've seen with the other LLMs that we just mentioned, and that thing cannot be taken down, you know, it could be a very interesting counter to this potential utopian world which we're walking to, where whoever controls the AI controls the truth, right? And I'm quite excited about that. Again, very, very far from becoming something. There is obviously a huge incentive from the chip manufacturing that doesn't happen, because, you know, who needs big chips if everybody's running nodes on their computer anyway. But I do see something exciting in there, and I've been spending quite some time investigating and learning and getting my hands into it, because it's a clear use case.
Yeah, I think this is, there's so much to unpack here that we've just talked about. We've gone into the whole world of, you know, epistemology, right? And how do we know what is true? I know, I'm pretty sure I've seen, I don't know if it was a study or just some kind of news articles of some pretty influential people talking about the fact that the advent of generative AI is going to really hamper our critical faculties, our ability to think critically about things, because we're using it as search engines. I do that. We're using it to do jobs for us, and it's going to reduce, because, you know, use it or lose it, right? So our ability to critically analyze things on the internet even is going to become worse, at the same time as the ability to modify and kind of use AI itself to create new content. The content is increasing and our ability to fight it is worse, in a sense, right, on a human level. So I completely agree, this avenue of decentralized AI, it's something that to what you were saying, is for me, it's very nebulous. I don't know how it's going to work yet, but there's clearly, if it can be cracked, there's definitely something to be said for it, right? And I think the way I would describe it is with a different example. When I first, you know, realized there's potential in this, it's almost like crowdsourcing knowledge, right? Or crowdsourcing intelligence. And they're a really interesting app. I think it's on Solana now, called BitPing. And they were basically crowdsourcing network intelligence. So they were getting things from the edges of computer networks, basically people using their phones as nodes, reporting internet speeds, which gives companies a better idea of uptime and whether their website's live or not, but in specific locations on specific devices, rather than companies having to do that themselves. And it's much, much more informative for them, right? And that's the kind of analogy I think of, is that if we can crowdsource inputting into AI instead of it being in these central hubs, the quality of that information should be better if the incentives are right. And that's the bit I think is the big challenge. Like, how do you balance the incentives? How do you police, quote unquote, that system? But yeah, it's very, very exciting, I think. What do you think about, I guess, the other side of the coin when we talk about crypto and AI would be around agents. So that's maybe something slightly different, but that's kind of us using AI and how we build AI almost. But agents is more like, how do we let AI go and do stuff for us? And how do we use crypto to give AI money, basically give AI payment rails to go and do jobs for us? So are you seeing potential in that side of things as well? And what are you excited about there?
Yeah, so I've been quite careful on how we talk about all of this, because one of my core values is I don't talk about things I haven't done. You know, and a lot of people have been within this last 10 to 12 months just like, bro, when are you going to talk about AI? Like, bro, AI is happening. You won't go into it. And I literally haven't. You know, I haven't, because I just didn't feel comfortable of not having enough exposure to it. So I spent literally the last 10 months working with a bunch of AI companies in the intersection of crypto AI, invested in a lot of projects, got to talk with a lot of founders, you know, got really deep the rabbit hole. And now I start feeling more and more comfortable to talk about it, right? I played a role as CMO of CreatorBid for 5 months, the AI launchpad that just went to market with it. I've been working with a bunch of other companies. I've been working with Cookie Tree as well for almost 3 years now, the index for AI agents, and many other, you know, projects. I'm advising a company that in 10 days is going for TG as well, that is a L1 for agents as well. So I've been spending a lot of time on that to get to the point on which I feel much more comfortable, you know, like starting to talk about it. And I will, because the point you just made around how agents will be interacting on our behalf makes me almost feel that the entire back end that we've built within Web3 will almost not need a user interface. The agent is going to connect directly with it, and we're just going to be like interacting with the interface from the agent per se. And then everything,
you just don't care about the UX, right?
Like, I don't really give a f-, just get that done.
Yeah.
So I started like going to this dream now of like, or hypothesis for a better word, of is kind of like, is that where we're heading? Because when you start looking into all the DeFi thing, right? Decentralized finance with AI, that's pretty much it, right? You look into the projects that are being built, Hey Anon and a bunch of others. That's essentially what it is. It's taking the interface out of the equation and making it much easier and accessible for anyone to interact with it, which essentially has always been the goal. But still, when you talk about bridging, when you talk about liquidity pools, when you talk about, you know, like how you set certain elements within DeFi, like, you know, impermanent laws and all of that, like impermanent laws and all of that. I mean, it's challenging for normies to understand, right? And even for us, a lot of times still is. So I think that that layer being built on top of it, on which you can literally just prompt, you know, do this, that, and that, send here, send there, this is the wallet, blah, blah, blah. There are use cases we've been seeing on the timeline as well that, you know, you can literally just add a handle on X and it does a certain exchange or send money to someone's wallet and things like that. So the thing that excites me the most about this element of AI agents operating in your behalf is that I deeply believe that the currency for AI is going to be crypto, because there is no way that's going to be a banking system that to do a payment from Asia to the US takes 6 business days. And you need to be tracking your number and money and calling the bank and trying to figure out where the money is. For a global autonomous economy, I cannot see, and I could be wrong, but I cannot see a better system than crypto for that to exist. Even if just stables, right? Even if that, as Alex said, a lot of times, you know, that small use case can be big enough, but I cannot see it. So that's why I'm really excited about it. That element, the element of taking away the UI and experience complexity of it, meaning it's like literally just an API that you can connect with everything. There is one bar there, like Google or ChatGPT, and you say, do this, do that, find this, pay for that, blah, 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 things are getting done, right? I'm quite bullish into that,
That's kind of, it completely changes like what the the outlook is for a lot of these blockchain crypto companies, right? Because everyone's always said the tech is great, it's fantastic, yes, but the problem has always been the UX and the UI, getting people to understand the benefits. And what you're saying is maybe now, like, AI agents potentially take all that problem away. There's going to be loads of founders now who are scrapping their entire UX and UI department, being like, no, we just need one AI developer, it'll be fine, which completely changes the mindset, right? But there's going to be so many, there's predictions, there's going to be so many AI agents, like millions, if not billions of AI agents that are interacting in the world in the next 5 to 10 years, just predictions. But like that in itself is the market for this stuff. They potentially will be, you know, transacting with fees. They will be the end users, and they don't need the pretty user interfaces. Their only input is, like you say, a little chat prompt, which it even over the course of two years, these ideas have come about. That completely changes the game for SaaS products going forward, blockchain, crypto. And I guess it all relates to branding, is then do you need to start to pitch the branding for this industry at AI agents rather than individuals? Like, and then how do you start to sell to the head and the heart for an AI agent? It's all about efficiency and maybe the tech more than anything, and making it really does, like, okay, you know what I'm going to end with? I want to ask you, based on all this, if you were to give one key piece of advice to like the Web3 leaders about fixing this branding problem, what would it be?
Yeah. The core thing is you need to make people see the unseen, right? Like every founder that's at the edge of technology that is having those epiphanies and that are building literally the edge of the edge of the edge. It's so clear for them and it's so clear in their mind that they're unable to communicate to anybody else. And that's the biggest pitfall, because you need to make people see the unseen. They need to make them see what you have seen and make them understand why it matters. And you need to meet them where they are, because they're not coming to you. They're not going to go through all this knowledge leap to understand what you're building and why it matters. So that's kind of like the main thing, you know. You got to get people to see what you've seen. And that's why, you know, people like me and the work I do exist, because that's what we do. That's what we do for a living, right? We translate that. We make people see that. We make it attractive. We make it top of mind. We make them choose you rather than others. We make them come and stop at your station, not someone else's, right? Because as this thing starts evolving, and as we see, especially in this year, there's a lot of, you know, excitement on the masses and governments and institutions and adoption and a lot of things changing. Like, people are going to be really quickly coming in and having to choose, and who they're going to choose, the ones that they can understand.
Yeah, I think so much to take away from this episode. I think, you know, that idea of meeting people where they are, meeting in the middle, is really refreshing. And I think it's absolutely the way we need to go with this in the future. And to be honest, you've also kind of fired off my neurons a little bit on, you know, what Alec was saying there. Maybe Web3's branding problem will be solved by, you know, doesn't need a brand anymore. As Alec said, maybe the Web3 brand will just become the AI brand, because people are pretty sold now on AI and AI agents, that they're a good thing. And if they're just using Web3 under the hood, well, you know, it becomes a tech stack. It becomes like the internet. You know, the internet hasn't got a branding problem. Everyone knows it's necessary. So yeah, lots to chew on. I've really enjoyed this, Diego. Before you, where can people find you? What are you up to? Anything you want to say before we kind of close this one off?
Yeah, 100%, guys. Thanks for having me. You can find me, most of my content I do on LinkedIn, because again, I've been in this bridging element of like how we get other people to see what we are doing in our industry. There is a lot of really qualified people doing a tremendous work on X. Of course, I spend 25 hours of my day there, but my main content I'm creating on LinkedIn. So just hit Diego, B-O-R-G-O, Borgo on the search. See the guy with the pink beanie on and you're going to see everything I'm up to.
Yeah, you can't miss Diego. It's been an absolute pleasure, Diego. I'm sure. Hopefully, this won't be the last time we have you on the show. It's been a really eye opening for me. And to everyone listening at home, thank you for listening. And you can join us next week to untangle a little more Web3.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Untangling Web3.
Don't forget to send us your thoughts, questions, and comments on social media. And be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast provider to catch the next episode. See you next time to untangle a little bit more of Web3.
The views we express here are our own and do not reflect the views of our employers.